This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Normally, this is when I would ramble on about who my guest is, set up the episode, how excited I am. But no, not today. Not today. There's no time for that. The trade deadline just passed. Got to jump right in. And my guests are, in fact, my colleagues from the SI NBA team. My crossover tag team partner, Chris Mannix. And from the Open Floor Pod, Michael The Pod Pina. I don't know why he has that nickname. I'm going to ask. And Rohan Nadkarni, this is part two of our trade deadline megapod for part one. Listen to the Open Floor Pod, where the four of us discussed the winners of the trade deadline. And for this episode, we are now getting to the losers. I feel like we need like the Price is Right thing when the guy, you know, when they go bust.
Howard, I have a question for you before we start.
Is it about my intro? Because
no,
I'm not going to tolerate
not,
any slander
quite,
of my intro.
Not quite. If you had to guess yes or no, would you say you're pushing P?
I don't even know where to go.
What is wrong with you?
Listen, ever since Howard, for no reason, threw shots at me in the email, I said, I'm going to put him on the spot at the start of the pod, and I'm going to figure out the most uncomfortable way to do it, and this felt like the one.
It's great, because I have no idea what exactly you just asked me. It's phenomenal. I can't feel uncomfortable if I don't even know what, if I don't understand the question. You can explain that, or I can put your pod partner on the spot and ask how Michael Pina could dub himself, give himself a nickname of the pod, as if like the
how
podcast began and ended with Michael Pina podcast. How are you the pod?
So
is this like
all,
with Kobe? Is this like Kobe calling himself the Mamba? Did you give yourself this?
Absolutely not. I did not give myself this nickname. I do not like this nickname.
You use it every time you introduce yourself as the pod.
The emailers, that's how they address me. So I gotta, you know, this is my brand. I've fallen into it, but it was actually given to me by my former co-host Ben Golliver. I don't really recall why he did that, but it stuck. And you know, these things just happen. But I will say, Howard, I'm glad you got a taste of what I have to deal with once a week with Rohan. Just misery at the top of the show, every show.
He just created the single most awkward pause in the history of the crossover pod. So congrats,
I think your listeners are going to love it.
Thank you for that. As if Mannix doesn't give me enough headaches every week. All right, guys, this is the losers pod, which does not necessarily refer to the four of us. The listeners will be the judge of that. Mannix, you kick this off. Who's the big loser of the trade deadline?
Oh, this is easy. It is your Los Angeles Lakers.
Dun, dun,
I mean,
dun,
come on. We're gonna spend 45 minutes talking about the Lakers.
This is gonna be
we might need to put a timer on this.
The Lakers pack is going up tonight.
Listen, it was just Wednesday that the Lakers got beat by Anthony Simons and like the cast of Grown Ups in that game against the Trailblazers. It was the worst. That had to have been rock bottom. Like that was the bottom for the Lakers. Getting beat up by the Bucks, that happens, right? Getting beat up by the zombie Blazers, not so much. They, like, you see all the stories coming from the great Laker writers out there, from Dave McMenamin, Bill Oram, all the guys that were out there. They're all kind of saying the same thing. They're all sourcing stuff, saying something needs to happen. The Lakers know something needs to change. And then Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, comes and goes, and nothing happens. Nothing changes. And now we're hearing about how the Lakers are going to be buyout aggressive. Like, okay, like, what else do you want me to believe when it comes to this team? This is, it's not only a disaster, it's a predictable disaster. Because shocking that nobody was interested in the Talen Horton Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, who hasn't played a minute this season, poo-poo platter for something real. Like, you couldn't get Jeremy Grant for that? I'm stunned. And I'm equally stunned that nobody wanted to take a flyer on Russell Westbrook, who, whether it's an injury or tentativeness, like, just did not look like himself in that game against Milwaukee. So, like, it hasn't looked like himself much of the season, for that matter. He's not fit in with that team as well. So the Lakers coming off back-to-back horrifying losses, the furthest under 500 that have been this season, having their full squad effectively at full strength, and they do nothing. That is a loser afternoon, fellas.
Well, and the worst part of it is that it's not just that they did nothing. They did nothing because they couldn't, right? There are teams like, you know, the Knicks wanted to do things and they didn't. We'll get to them later, I'm sure. There are other teams that, you know, you sometimes you want to do something, you just don't find the right deal. The Lakers had no deals to make. That, I think, is the depressing part, Ro.
Yeah, it's really rough. I mean, first of all, like, Damian Lillard's in a beer commercial that doesn't have NBA rights, so he's wearing like a generic uniform and playing on a court with a bunch of generic players. Like, that's who was on the Blazers roster the other night. It was like the guys who they need to fill in like a Gatorade commercial. It was embarrassing. I love Frank Vogel. I really like Frank Vogel. I think he's done a good job. I can't believe he didn't get fired after that Blazers loss. Just with the way this season has gone, it's kind of shocking to me. Also, I want to say, when we did this Megapod before the season, I said it wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers went out in the first round of the playoffs. Apparently that was too generous, because they're not even a guarantee to make it to the first round of the playoffs. They're a huge loser. In my winners and losers column, I have one of my big losers, LeBron James's cigar room, you know, the mahogany wood, where he was holding his free agent meetings over the summer, you know, weighing, do I want DeMar DeRozan? Do I want Russell Westbrook? Listen, there's got to be a measure of blame that goes to LeBron for how this Lakers season has played out. As well as he's played, he's had the effort there when he's been healthy, but this was the team he seemingly wanted. The Athletic reported that before the start of the season.
Seemingly wanted? This is the team he wanted, okay? Yeah, this is the group of players that he wanted. Like, you will never whatever you think of Rob Pelinka, there is no way that Rob Pelinka believed that Russell Westbrook was better for this team than Buddy Hield. Like, I don't believe that. I firmly believe that this was LeBron believing a guy like Westbrook, who he'd grown close with over the last couple of years, who he like shares a kindred competitiveness with, would find a way to make it work in LA. And this was one of those transactions, not to go back too far back in time and rehash this, but everybody, literally everybody, I did not talk to one person outside of the Laker payroll who thought this was going to work out. Like, not one. Whether it's an assistant coach from Team X, an executive from Team Y, nobody thought it was going to work out. So here the Lakers are, coming off those horrifying losses. You mentioned Frank Vogel. They are going to fire Frank Vogel at some point. That feels like a matter of when, not if. It will make zero difference. None whatsoever. But I think he will wind up getting scapegoated for this before the end of the season. This is a mess in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and just to wrap up that LeBron point, like, it's obvious that everywhere he's gone, he's had a level of influence over the roster. He practically bullied the Cavs into making all the changes that he wanted over the years. But this is the first time where I think any hope that anybody had in the Lakers was predicated entirely on the fact that LeBron is good enough that he will figure this out. He's a good enough chess player that he can figure out how to move Russell Westbrook around the board to bend the game to his will. And this is probably the biggest failure in that sense of his career, in terms of not being able to overcome the situation. It feels like the first time he's really not been able to overcome it with what he does. And he has to be kicking himself, because he's played well enough to be in the finals again this season if he had the right team around him.
Yeah. Can I just say I understand why you guys are being critical of LeBron. Like, LeBron's doing what he's paid to do, which is be one of the five best basketball players on the planet when he suits up in a Lakers jersey. He's been tremendous this season. It's like Anthony Davis, coming into this season, you needed Anthony Davis to be an MVP candidate. You needed Anthony Davis to be a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. You needed Anthony Davis to stay healthy. he's been one of the more disappointing players. He didn't make the All-Star team. He's one of the more disappointing players in the league in my eyes. And criticism, I'll say, like, I kind of disagree about the Rob Pelinka point. I think he's the worst or one of the worst personnel decision makers in the NBA, and has proven that time and time again. But like, so I can be critical of the decisions that the front office made. They put them in this situation where their backs are against the wall and they have no options. But like, your stars have to show up, and like, Anthony Davis hasn't really shown up this season. I didn't expect Russell Westbrook to play great. I think the fit is trash. But I didn't expect Russell Westbrook to be this bad either. And right now it's like, you built this team because Anthony Davis didn't want to play the five. So you have DeAndre Jordan, you have Dwight Howard on your roster, and you're playing minutes still with everybody healthy, with LeBron at center or Stanley Johnson at center or Carmelo Anthony as the nominal five. And it's like, what is this team doing? And the fact that they made no move, you can't make one shakeup to even a move just to make a move to like get a new face in the locker room. Like what? It's so perplexing. I don't know what they do from this point forward throughout from here to the play-in if they make the play-in. Like how do you just running out the string? Like what? It's amazing to me. It's truly remarkable.
LeBron sounded outright despondent after the Blazers loss. He's like, I'm just gonna go home and drink some wine. Like he just, I don't think I've ever seen or heard LeBron seem so just defeated. Right? There's always a little bit of defiance there. There's always a, you know, he's LeBron freaking James. He's one of the greatest players in the history of the game. Like his confidence, even in the face of whatever's going on with any of his teams at any given time, it always overcomes, but not this. Like he just sounds defeated. I was doing NBA radio earlier in the day and my co-host Evan Cohen actually suggested, hey, if they keep sliding like this, maybe they should just shut LeBron down for the sake. Oh my God. Like this is now a thing. Like shut down. Like, hey, it was a little extreme, but it's suddenly doesn't sound that crazy. I mean, listen, I still think there's a best case scenario or a glass half full version of this where no matter how bad they are, they still have LeBron and Anthony Davis. They pull it together. They stabilize a little bit. They get in the play-in. They win the eighth seed and probably get their butts kicked in the first round, but they're still a playoff team. So I don't know that this is the time to be pulling the plug and shutting down LeBron for next year. But also, by the way, their problems are still going to endure for next season because they're locked into the same cast, and I don't know how much more they're going to be able to change in July than they did or didn't today.
I think Rock, go ahead, Chris. That's Howard, the rock bottom moment is March 21st when LeBron rolls into Cleveland and the Cavs roll the Lakers like 112-86. Like, it's just like that building is out of control loud. Ooh, and boy. Like Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. He's going to see Kevin Love, big smile coming off the bench, knocking down threes, like
fitting in.
There's a moment when LeBron. Yeah, there's a moment when LeBron is just like, what am I doing? Like, that's probably going to be it.
Yeah. I did you look that up while we were talking or did you already had that circled? You already had
yeah,
that one.
We talked about this. Like I've had that circled for, yeah. for a while. Like that game.
For the life of me, I just do not understand. I literally cannot bring myself to understand how the Lakers could have played the Rockets in a playoff series. Just simply looked at the tape of how they themselves defended Russell Westbrook. And after that thought, this is a good idea. It is one of just the highest acts of organizational malpractice I can remember in NBA history. It makes you just played him in the playoffs and you just saw how poorly that went for his team. It's mind blowing to me.
It is, without ever looking this up, and I still have not, and one day I will, just to make sure that there's not something more glaring in the history books, it's got to be the most catastrophic trade in Laker history. I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think that's a stretch. I don't think I'm taking any great risks by not having looked up the history of all of their other trades. It's got to be the most catastrophic trade in Laker history, given what the stakes are, given who they have in LeBron, given what his age and the window, the context, all of it. And as Manic said, there was not a single person in the league, coaches, GMs, scouts, anybody that any of us have talked to who thought this was a good idea other than the Lakers. And I will say this too. Yes, LeBron wanted Russ there, but this is still on Rob Pelinka and on Jeannie Buss for allowing it to happen. You don't have to cave to your superstar. The Miami Heat did not let LeBron run the team while he was there. The Cavaliers in his two stints there depended on which era, but your job as the team president or GM and as the owner is to be the backstop and to sometimes put your foot down and say, you know what, I get it, but this is not the way to go. We're not doing this. And so this is still, you know, I know it's more fodder for those who want to just blame LeBron for everything or take shots at him. This is on Rob Pelinka. Plain and simple. Also, it's Pelinka and Jeannie Buss who decided they didn't want to pay the luxury tax on Alex Caruso, so they let him walk. And it's Rob Pelinka who made all the other moves that compounded this over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Talen Horton-Tucker, what's he shooting, like 25% from behind the
I just want to know how his haircut doesn't like make him off balance. There's just so much hair on the backside of
that critique. I did not see coming.
The physics of it don't check out to me personally, but I'm not an expert. I was doing my own research.
I have a question. So the one semi possible trade that they had was Russell Westbrook and their 2027 first round pick to the Houston Rockets for John Wall. Are you guys surprised at all that trade didn't happen, given that like anything is better than Russell Westbrook? Like why keep the 2027 first right now? Are you going, what are you saving it for?
The way their franchise is headed, that might be a deeply important pick for them.
The problem is like
LeBron's 37 years old, man.
I don't know how Wall helps them though. Like, he certainly doesn't help them the rest of this year. He's not in game shape, and then next year, he's still kind of the same John Wall, that high usage rate guy who can't shoot from the perimeter. He's like he's like Russell Westbrook light in that situation. I think if you're like the bold move, frankly, would just be like, all right, we're going to waive you, Russ. Like that's it. Like we don't like, you don't have to give a first round pick in that scenario. And you kind of excise something that doesn't work. Of course, that would never happen because of all the assets they gave up to get Russell Westbrook. They'll never give in on that count. But I know I'm not surprised they didn't attach a draft pick to Russ, especially not if you're not getting back. Like, if they did a deal with the Knicks where I can see, like, getting Fournier and getting like Kemba and like these are not, and Burks, like these are not answers, but like, yeah, like that there's floor spacers, at least Fournier is.
The Knicks theoretically trade would have been a home run.
That makes some sense.
Why would the Knicks ever do that?
I mean, there's a small argument for the Knicks doing it in terms of they get off money sooner. And I think people are saying 2023 is going to be kind of the next big free agent class. I'm not saying it's a good argument. They get off the money sooner.
Michael, I'm sure you've watched plenty of the Knicks. Like, they're running everything through Julius Randle right now, which is like insane. Like, I'm watching Julius Randle isolations at like the elbow over and over and over again. So like, they're another team where it's like, it really can't get any worse. Like, maybe we just change up some spare parts.
I mean, they get out and run with Russ maybe a little bit. I'm not saying they would have been good. I just think that like, it would have been a reshuffling for both teams. That's not a net bad either.
This seems like a good time to shift to the next team on the list, at least for me, and you guys feel free to push back. But the Knicks were next on my list after the Lakers.
Oh,
just in terms of losers of the day, in large part, just because there was certainly plenty of speculation and reporting, not just speculation, plenty of reporting that they were looking to move off of Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, their most recent free agent haul, as well as entertaining offers potentially for Randle, whether it was going to be Randle for De'Aaron Fox, which of course went off the board as soon as the Kings decided to stick with Fox and move off of Halliburton. But the Knicks did nothing. The Knicks did nothing at the deadline, and this is a team that is going nowhere. There's no identifiable star to build around, or even a second-tier star. We don't know what RJ Barrett will one day become. We know what Randle was a year ago, and he does not seem remotely capable of replicating it. He's picking fights with the fan base, or maybe the fan
and
base
picks
fights with him.
And his coaches.
And his coaches and the video coordinator and laptop computers. fans are now like, you know, say they want Tibbs fired. Like it's a mess. It's back to the bad old Knicks again, and they didn't do anything to try to fix it or even just rearrange deck chairs on the Titanic. They didn't do anything at all. And I don't know that they were going to fix this season, but at least moving off of some of the vets so that you could just focus on the youth the rest of the way. I know it's not the Tibbs way, but I know there's been some deliberations within the Garden about exactly that the only way to get Tibbs to play Cam Reddish and to expand the roles for some of the other young guys and develop them is to take away some of the vets that he's always going to lean on, because that's how Tibbs is wired. And they didn't clear anything up. I still don't know what exactly it is they're trying to accomplish the rest of this season.
I think so that, Tibbs was...
Can I just say, ahead, like, Mike, that is the silliest thing about this to me, is the Cam Reddish element, where you give up a first and you give up Kevin Knox, whatever, but you bring a guy in who is extension eligible and 10th overall pick, really talented player who thinks very highly of himself. But like, you would think that a team that did that everyone would be on the same page, and you would play Cam Reddish, if not just like before the trade deadline to see what you have, and then maybe you could flip Cam Reddish if you weren't happy with it. But you play Cam Reddish, you see what's there, you see how he fits in your system, you see how he fits with your core pieces. He obviously already has a relationship with RJ Barrett, and it's like, then it becomes, because Tibbs wasn't on board with the trade, Tibbs does not play Cam Reddish, and I think he played him like 40 total minutes, if that, before the trade deadline. And you're in a position now where you have to trade a veteran and compound the mistake to force your head coach to play the asset that you brought in, and then you don't even make that move. So it's like, what are you doing? Like, the communication level, it's just like, is transparently terrible. And like you were saying, Howard, I don't know what their direction is after not making any moves here. And it's just, it's kind of spiraling when you watch this team play basketball.
I just want to say that I think Tibbs was a great coach for last year's Knicks team. I don't think he's a good coach for this year's Knicks team. Listen, last year was, in many ways, you know, Mike and I have talked about this in our pod. Last year was in many ways like a higher variance season than the bubble season, just because of, you had a team like the Knicks that had 9 months off between games, right? And I think you're seeing that play out a little bit right now, where everyone's like, why is Julius Randle not the same player he was last season? Kind of because he never was the player he was last season. In terms of why that Russ trade, I think there was an argument for it. It is because it gives them an opportunity, Mike, I think, to reset the decks a little bit earlier than they can now. I still think they should be looking to move off some salary. I'll push back lightly on, I do think RJ Barrett over the last 6 weeks has been playing fantastic. You would have liked to have seen him do it from the start of this season, but I think over the last, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, he's been the player many expected him to be from opening night this season. He's been on, I think, quite a tear, showing that he can be the kind of player. I don't know if he's going to be the best guy in a championship team, but somebody you want on a good team.
He's not. He's not, Rohan.
Okay, and that's fine. Confused. But it's very hard to find that player in the draft, even in the top five, as much as we talk about these guys. I think he can definitely be a good player on a good team. I think he can be a valuable part of a contender. We just don't know, because the Knicks are always going to be caught in between. I think, frankly, as long as they have Tibbs, who I think is a good coach, but you need a specific roster for him. I mean, Mannix brought up those Julius Randle ISOs. You know, the blessing and curse of Tibbs is he's so desperate to win every regular season game that he's going to grind it down to a halt. He's going to minimize the number of possessions. And, you know, he's going to just try to break you on a Tuesday night in February. But that's not the roster they have. They have Obi Toppin. They have Julius Randle. They have RJ Barrett. They have Emmanuel Quickley. They should be out running. This should be a young, fast team. That's not what they are. And I do think that they need to – I mean, Reddish even fits in perfectly with that kind of idea. So I think that there's something there, but they need to do some serious reshuffling to kind of unlock the potential of this roster.
They need Derrick Rose back.
Well, they do need that.
Yeah.
All right, Howard, can I got to switch to a team that I have to unload a little bit on here. Ooh. Like, what the fuck is Portland doing? Like, what exactly? No, honestly, like, what exactly is going on with that? Like, you look at the last few days, and they clear the decks. Like, all their best assets are gone. Norman Powell is gone. CJ McCollum is gone. Robert Covington is gone. And what do they have to show for it? Like, they got a first-round pick from the Pelicans and salary cap flexibility.
And Josh Hart.
All right, Josh Hart, fine. A role player on a...
Very good defender.
Very good, fine. All right, I'll give you Josh Hart. Great, that's wonderful. Building block right there.
He's taller than CJ McCollum.
Okay, great, even better. But like long term, like what do they have here? They got a trade exception, salary cap space, a first round pick, and Josh Hart. Like, I don't know how Damian Lillard wakes up Friday morning and is like, I feel good about this team's future. Like, does he wake up and feel like I'm going to be rich because they have to give me an extension now to, you know, make me happy? But I don't get it. Like, cap flexibility is fine. Nobody signs in Portland. Like, that's just that simple. They don't. What I was disappointed in is that the Blazers didn't turn around and use that draft pick, maybe something else, to go get Jeremy Grant. Like, I don't know. Like, I've always wondered how available Jeremy Grant was. I know Troy Weaver, the GM out there, loves him. They built a whole... I mean, Cade Cunningham's not like the face of the franchise. Before that, like, it was Jeremy Grant coming to Detroit. That was a big marketing campaign for them. So, like, maybe it would have taken more, but not getting something real at the deadline, like, what are we doing? Like, what? On top of that, like, in my mind, they made some of these deals too quickly, right? Like, were the Clippers, what were they going to do? You know, the Clippers were kind of sitting there landlocked in a lot of ways. Like, they were that deal that for Powell and Covington probably would have been there on Thursday at 2:55. And maybe in between when that deal went down a couple of days ago. And now, as we saw on Thursday afternoon, a flurry of other things happened. Teams get interested. Maybe you could have extracted more, a first round pick for either Powell or Covington to add to that value. I feel like they did that deal a little too knee-jerk. And the New Orleans one, the Pelicans were in on a lot of players, so I can understand some nerves seeing that deal kind of getting taken off the table, but I don't know. I don't know what Portland just did here. They tore this team down, and that's always the easiest thing to do, but it's not like they're asset-rich all of a sudden. They're cap-rich, which, okay, but outside of this first-round pick and Howard's apparently favorite player, Josh Hart, like, I don't know what they gained from the last couple of days.
Well, I mean, what I'll say is, like, it's hard to judge Portland right now before we see what happens in the offseason. And they're in a really tricky spot with Dame, obviously. Things haven't really gone as they hoped this season. But it's like, what did you want them to do if they couldn't make the deals that they did? Would you have rather them hold on to Robert Covington and Norm Powell and CJ McCollum and not have the flexibility this summer? Like, cause
but Mike Powell, like, is, to me, Powell's the kind of guy that if you don't deal him, like, you can deal him later, right? Like, there's, you can make a better deal maybe before the draft. I don't know. Like, they didn't get anything is what I'm saying. They just got off his contract and got off. And, like, you know, I see quotes from Joe Cronin, like, clear the runway for Anthony Simons. Like, okay. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, I'd want to play Simons as much as possible, but, like, you could also do that in June, you know, frankly. I think Simons is playing, like, how many minutes is that guy playing? He's playing like 40 minutes a night at this point. Like, so I don't know. I would have held out if there wasn't a deal that got me back a first in exchange for Norman Powell and Covington, by the way. So, you know, the Clippers, we didn't talk about them in the winner's pod, but they're kind of winners. Like, I mean, they got
huge.
They
winners.
Got two guys that they now can add to Kawhi and Paul George next season. So, or at least one in Norm. I don't know. I just don't think I think they were just too eager to create that cap flexibility. And, like, Mike, to follow up on you there, like, what do they use it on? Like, what, like, granted, things tend to materialize that you don't see, but is there a free agent I'm missing that is desperate to go play in the Pacific Northwest? Like, is Damian Lillard going to lure somebody there at this point? Like, they still remain light years behind being a contender.
Well, they're in a position now with the cap room to, if nothing else, you know, you could use cap room in other ways, right? No, they're not a free agent destination or historically have not been. And when they have signed free agents, they've sometimes overspent on the wrong ones. But they're now in a position to either play facilitator for teams that need to use their cap room.
So what, they're now the Thunder? Like, they're now the Oklahoma City Thunder? Like,
they're gonna love the Dame and Tobias Harris combo in Portland next year.
It is one option, Chris. It also gives them the ability, yes, to make uneven trades where you're taking in more salary than you're sending out. You know, that's almost as dicey of a game as free agency, because you're just waiting for something to emerge and you don't know what that thing might be. And they did need to clear not just the space for Anfernee Simons to play by trading McCollum and Norm Powell, but they needed to clear the cap room or the payroll flexibility to pay Anfernee Simons and not end up a bazillion dollars into the luxury tax while still not being a competitive team. So to an extent, cleaning up the books, like, the goal is fine. The outcome in the abstract is fine. But I agree with you, Chris, that, like, they didn't get enough back. That's the bottom line. It's like, there are trades like this all the time where the end result, oh, well, they cleared cap room, they did that. Like, yes, there's some fine things that come out of that. Cap room is good. Flexibility is good. Making room for your young guys to emerge and to pay them is good. But you should have been able to get more for Norm Powell. You should have been able to get, I think, even a little more for CJ McCollum. And that's where I think the failure is.
I will also add, I think they sent out 3 first-round picks to get Covington and Powell. They only got one in return in the trades that they made with them, the trades they made this week. My fear, honestly, my big fear for them is everyone's talking about we got to pay Anthony Simons, we got to pay him. If they pay him and Lillard, are they not, like, stuck back in some kind of time loop that is the same thing issue they had with McCollum and Lillard, which is a small backcourt that can score? But I'm not trying to be the guy who's like, well, they got to trade Dame now. But if you're really blowing it up, frankly, I just – like, Josh Hart, I like, for example. Josh Hart is someone who I think can have a role on a good team. He makes sense next to Lillard.
Have I not watched enough Josh Hart? Am I missing, like, Josh Hart as
– He's just a 3-and-D guy. He makes sense, right? But can he play next to Simons and Lillard? Now what? I just think that they – I don't hate what they did. My fears are going to quickly run into the same problems unless they trade Dame and kind of really go at it from the ground up.
It's like – my thing is just like, this is the thing that we wanted. I agree with what you're saying about the value on these individual trades. If you're, like, grading the trades individually, yeah, like, they didn't win any trades. For, like, Keon Johnson, I've never seen him play. I think he's shooting like 21% from the floor in the G League. Like, that's cool. So I agree with you. Like, they weren't great. They didn't get a haul back for any of these players. And clearly, like, you're just trying to shed salary for myriad reasons. Maybe you're trying to sell the team and you want to make it more attractive. I don't know what's going on in Portland right now. It's very complicated, but it all boils down to, like, you're basically just saying, okay, Dame, we gave you the flexibility now. Go out and get someone to come play with you. Go recruit now. We have we have resources now for us to bring players in. You've, you know, talked about your inability to recruit because of our financial restrictions before. So go out and do it. And it also comes back to, like, yeah, you're probably going to have to trade Damian Lillard. Like, that's probably going to have to happen at some point. And that's when you get the big Kickstarter, the big package to kind of restart your organization. But, like, right now, it was just kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I don't really mind them finally pulling the plug on a core and just, like, a group of players that it just clearly wasn't working. And it was getting very depressing and it was very costly and expensive. So that's why I just overall, I'm not killing the Blazers for what they did.
Lillard is an all-time great. And if he wants to stay in Portland forever, that should certainly be taken into account. But, like, does it not feel insane to you guys, the idea of, like, that team is currently constituted giving Lillard a 2-year extension in the summer? Like, he's gonna be 33 this summer, I think, and, like, he's coming off the worst shooting season of his career. Granted, it was abbreviated and he had some issues to start the season with health, but, like, we on the last podcast we talked about the albatross of a contract that James Harden is going to become. Like, Lillard now is wildly tradable. Like, he's got a big contract, but it's only got, what, a couple more years or a few more years left on it. And even though he had a bad shooting year, I think there's plenty of people around the league think that's more of an aberration than a sign of actual decline. Like, you know, it feels like the time to trade him is this summer. Like, strike while it's hot, because you cannot, like, I'm sorry, there's no PowerPoint presentation that is going to show me a pathway to being a championship contender in the next 2 years while Damian Lillard is in his prime, like, or 3 years, whatever you want to give him that one. I don't see it. So if that's not the case, and you just are content being a playoff team, that's a line of thinking I just can't wrap my head around.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that as an organization, your first obligation is to obviously surround Damian Lillard with the best talent you possibly can and maximize a player who, as you note, Chris, is an all-timer, future Hall of Famer, and deserves a competitive roster around him. Your next obligation is that if you can't do that, to trade him, but that I think depends on, and it's the same thing we've been talking about with Bradley Beal for the last couple of years. If the player says, no, I'm good, just keep working at it, I got faith in you, I want to be here, it's really hard to do that. Like, it's hard, you know, the obligation you have to the player to just kind of do right by him. If he wants to be there, then keep him. Also, to do right by your fan base, because, you know, rebuilds, teardowns are painful. When Dame Lillard goes, whether it's retirement, whether he slowly fades off into the sunset and continues a decline over the next few years, or whether it's when they trade him, it's going to be probably a very long time before they have a player as special as him and as fun to root for, too. So, like, you do have some obligation, too, to, you know, your fan base, to your business side and marketing and needing to sell tickets and to be viable as an entertainment vehicle. Like, there are other considerations before you just ship him out. But I agree that right now things look pretty bleak. If I'm Dame Lillard, I don't know why I would want to stay there for basketball wise. And if I'm the Blazers, I don't know that I have enough tools at my disposal to build this back up around him. And yeah, you could very easily argue, as Mannix you have, that the best way forward is to trade Lillard for everything you can possibly get. And that kickstarts a rebuild. But that's a painful band-aid to rip off.
But we're delaying the inevitable, though. Like, a rebuild is going to happen. So instead of having it happen in 3 years when Damian Lillard's trade value is not as great as it is right now, and you just witnessed maybe three straight seasons of them not even making the playoffs, like, trade him. Like, I get what you're saying about you have an obligation to the marketing department and the business side and the fan base and to Dame. But, like, as an organization, how is that the healthiest thing for you? I just think, like, the teardown is going to happen. It will, because all these it's all cyclical. And I just don't understand just kind of kicking the can down the road when it's kind of depressing to watch, frankly.
I'm gonna throw a question out that's just gonna completely hijack and derail this whole conversation.
Oh no.
Should the Lakers, by that logic, have traded Kobe Bryant in 2013?
they shouldn't.
Yes.
They shouldn't have given him that 2-year contract.
Well, that's kind of what I'm alluding to, but yeah.
How about this though? If let's say hypothetically that the Warriors go out in like the second round. Like, let's say that happens. Like, if there's an opportunity and you're Portland to extract two of the three Warriors young guys there, whether it's Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody, plus the Wiggins contract, like, who says no to that? Like, who turns that down? The Warriors say no to that, you're saying.
Yeah. I've never been a fan of the idea that Lillard and Curry should be like I don't think it works.
Good shooting never works in Golden State. That's never.
you're going to play two small defensively challenged guards together, and then Clay moves to the three. I mean, I don't. It's fine, I guess. I mean,
Didn't the Raptors win a championship with two small guards? Like, what are we talking about? Like, that
they can also defend. I think it would work just because they're so good. But I also I'm with Howard that it would be. It would work kind of in spite of itself. Yes. Can I throw out a sneak loser? They're not quite losers as much as they are sympathetic figures. Do you think, like, Sean Marks and Steve Nash are really happy today? I mean, I remember I did a story on Sean Marks a God, it must have been 3 or 4 years ago now. And I was in his office and I was like, you know, like, weren't you kind of happy you didn't have a first round pick? Because then Kenny Atkinson never had to tank and he could really build a culture here. And he was like, no, it would have been great if we had a first round pick. Like, this team was in an abyss. They had terrible contracts. They were most famous for making the worst trade in NBA history. He clears the decks, gets an all-time coup, signs Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And it's just been one obstacle after another since then. Durant misses the whole first year. Irving sits out the bubble. They have the guys barely play together last year. They lose on an insane, almost 3-point winner in the playoffs.
Now they trade for Harden. They gave up Jared Allen, Caris LeVert.
Jared Allen, all-star caliber player now. And now it's like, yes, they're in a good position. I think some people will even argue their team got better today. But I just cannot imagine how much Sean Marks and Steve Nash have both aged since they both joined the Nets. Poor Steve Nash just seems like one of the nicest, most level-headed, even-keeled people to ever be in the field of professional sports, even as the competitor as he is. He's dealt with headache after another. I'm sure on some level, the two of them are relieved that the Harden, you know, show is kind of over. They still have to deal with Kyrie. They still have to deal with Simmons. It's just been kind of an insane ride. And especially for Marks, who did such a good job putting them in the position to be in the superstar game. That's what every GM wants to do, right? You got to put yourself in position to acquire superstars. Like, he's now learning what that means, which is you are also at the mercy of their whims. And it's just one day it's in your favor. And the next day, you know, James Harden is out of shape and says his hamstring hurts and he wants to get traded. Like, man, it was worth it for them, but I just cannot imagine the anxiety levels that Nash and Marks have on a daily basis dealing with this team.
I mean, Nash could just resign any day and be super happy with his life.
I don't know why he did this. He seemed so happy just talking about soccer on TV. This just, gosh.
And he lives in Manhattan Beach. He could just go back to Manhattan Beach. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. And, you know, look, they did offload one headache in Harden, who was clearly sulking his way out of town. But they bring on Ben Simmons, who brings all of his own baggage with him. I will say, I think if there's a coach whose, you know, emotional intelligence and empathy and communication skills and everything else could perhaps form a better bond. And this is not a knock on Doc Rivers at all or Brett Brown. I think Simmons is just very difficult to reach. But I think Nash has a chance perhaps to get the best out of him. And, you know, it's complicated. Like, you're dealing with that. You're still dealing with Kyrie being a part-time player and with Kyrie being Kyrie. I don't envy the position they're in at all, but that's why they get paid the big bucks, guys.
I know we talked about the Nets in our last episode quite a bit, but for me it just all comes back to the Joe Harris ankle surgery gone wrong.
Really?
For this team. No, that's a huge I really can't say how, if you watch this team play basketball, the fact that they have literally no space at all on the court and they play DeAndre Bembry and Bruce Brown and James Johnson, it's like, watch how they played last year with Joe Harris versus how they play this year. I know there's all these other, I'm not minimizing the Kyrie thing or anything like that. I'm just saying that injury is one that they have potentially no ability to overcome.
I mean, that was the one role player they had, right? That was like the one, that mid-level contract, like that's the player the Lakers are missing. I agree. He's a very important piece, but I don't know about it all coming down to Joe Harris, but his absence has been a bigger deal than people realize.
All right. Well, the Nets are still in our winners category, despite our attempts now to paint them as sympathetic underdogs or something here. Pino, you got anybody else on the losers list?
You know, I'm glad you asked, Howard. My big loser is, and my number one loser, actually, and I'm surprised they haven't come up yet, besides the Lakers, of course, the Utah Jazz. This is a team that has been, they've been spiraling. I understand that it's because of you know, injuries to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell had the concussion and all that. And I know that when those two are on the court, they're still a very good team. When Rudy's on the court, their defense is still really good. But, like, this is a team that just needed perimeter defense in a bad way. And for them to come out of the trade deadline with Nickeil Alexander-Walker as, like, the get, and then they're selling it, like, he's going to be great in our development program. Like, we're going to
The famous Jazz development program.
It's like, have you watched him play basketball this season? Like, the Pelicans have given him every opportunity to be an impact player in their rotation, and it hasn't worked out. And it's like, the Portland Trailblazers, who are, as we just discussed, basically rebuilding, you would think that they would love to get a 17th, what is he, drafted 17th overall, first, recent first round pick, young player in their system, and they immediately send him away. Like, that's the guy that they're kind of hanging their hat on. Like, I wasn't expecting them to get Harrison Barnes necessarily. They just don't have the powder there. I wasn't expecting Jeremy Grant, but like, someone, like, you can't get anybody to like improve your versatility on the defensive end when you know that that is, you're going to run up against a team that just picks you apart. If you play the Phoenix Suns in a playoff series and Rudy's dropping, Chris Paul and Devin Booker are just going to average 40 apiece from the mid range and you're done. Like, it's surprising to me. And maybe they see the writing on the wall there. I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree with Mike. I want to second that. I think the Jazz, I alluded to this in our winners podcast, that the Suns and Warriors were big winners because none of their competitors did anything that should scare them. I feel a little bit bad for Utah in the sense that I do think they were hamstrung, especially once Joe Harris tore his ACL. I don't know how much that changes.
Joe Ingles,
Valley.
My friend.
Joe Ingles. You could see why I might have mixed them up, but I don't know how much that affected his trade value. I imagine it did just a tiny bit, but they were a little bit hamstrung in the moves that they could make is what it comes down to. I mean, I'm a little shocked that Mike is calling them a loser though, because, you know, we can run the tape back on the crossover pod. How many times I said, you know, the Jazz are in trouble. Mike said they were more dangerous than the Warriors on numerous
occasions. Did you watch them play the Warriors last night? Did you catch that one, Rohan? Were you watching a Nancy Myers rom-com?
The Warriors.
What happened?
Clay and Draymond. So I just think that I feel bad for Utah because I just don't know if they had a lot out there for them, but they needed to figure something out. I mean, maybe they can still try to be players on the buyout market, which people have differing opinions on how much that ultimately helps, but they have the same problems they did last year, and that's a big issue for them.
I think they're in trouble. I think they're in trouble because this thing has run its course, and we know there are some tensions there in that locker room. Mm-hmm. And I've been told recently that they might be a little worse than we've even been led to believe. And so if this doesn't end well this postseason, and there's no reason to think that it will.
They're going to love Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. They're going to really they're going to love Caleb Martin.
Those Donovan Mitchell wants out rumors are going to be starting like as soon as the season is over.
Listen, Dwayne Wade, the ultimate sleeper agent. He did it with Jimmy Butler. He's going to do it with Donovan Mitchell.
He's going to steer him to Miami?
You heard it here first.
All right. Any other losers? We should wrap this up in the next few minutes. Anybody there's a couple of glaring ones that I can't believe we've hit, by the way.
Let's hear him.
The Kings? Sacramento?
Pino loved the Halliburton trade so much for the Pacers, I thought for sure you were going to spend 10 minutes just destroying the Kings.
It's low-hanging fruit, frankly. It's too easy.
Can I inject this podcast with some mild breaking news? But we're recording this during the All-Star Draft, and Harden might be the last pick. Apparently, Middleton and Garland and Gobert have all gone before Harden in the All-Star Draft. It should be noted that the captains are his now former teammate Kevin Durant and LeBron James. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Can I throw one more loser out there?
Go for it.
It's the player empowerment concern trolls. It's the people who get they're like, surely it won't work this time. Unfortunately, it works out for the player every time. You can be Ben Simmons and just show up on the last possible day before the preseason, not play any games, end up in a great situation. You can be James Harden, pick your teammates, show up out of shape. Guess what? You get traded to the team you want to go to. The sooner people accept that, like, it just seemingly works out for them every time. Maybe you do want the teams to fight back, but it's like a tough day for the anti-player empowerment crowd.
All right.
Can we cut, Shelby, can we cut that? I don't even know what Rohan was just talking about.
I'm just saying a lot of people get upset that, like, superstars are like, you know, they can't do it like this. They can't get their way this time. It's kind of remarkable that Simmons and Harden have ended up in the situations they've ended up in, is all I'm saying.
I'm just going to throw out one more, though. I know that I think it was Peter who was praising the Wizards in the winners pod that we did. I think the Wizards and Mavericks are like dual losers for this two-way salary dump, basically. Like, the Mavericks had to basically decide that Porzingis was a bad investment, so they dump him off on the Wizards, who realized very quickly that Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans, their last two big free agent signings, were bad investments. And so, you know, neither of them, it's not catastrophic. It's not a bad deal. It's not a great deal. But it was both sides having to admit to pretty big recent poor investments. So I just want to throw them in there.
Howard, real quick to clear my name, I said everyone who left the Washington Wizards was a winner. The exact opposite. Like, I
was pro Washington.
All right, sorry. Mannix was pumping up the Wizards for their blockbuster acquisition.
I think Dallas is a bit of a loser in this one. I mean, is Porzingis better than the Dinwiddie Bertans combination? I don't know.
I don't even know. Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, yeah. You know, they're running into problems finding the right talent around Luka Doncic. Like, they are. Like, they haven't been able to identify even the type of players that work around him. So maybe, I mean, Dinwiddie's kind of ball dominant too at times. Like, how's that going to work opposite Doncic? Like, can back in the Western Conference, will Davis Bertans, you know, find his shooting stroke once again? That's another one. Like, I don't, you know, it's, they're rolling the dice that they catch lightning in a bottle there. And, you know, Dinwiddie just needed to get away from Washington. Bertans needed a fresh start, and we'll see what happens. Because also, limited flexibility there.
Just because you acquired Jalen Brunson insurance doesn't mean you got the right insurance, doesn't mean you picked the right plan for, you know, your family there. Like, if they lose Brunson this summer and their thought is, oh, we have Dinwiddie, we can afford to lose Brunson, and next year they have Dinwiddie and Bertans instead of Brunson and Porzingis, their ceiling is significantly lower. I mean, maybe a change of scenery, we've seen it happen before for some guys, helps, but Dinwiddie's not been good this season. So they are, if their idea is, oh, now we have Brunson insurance, I don't know that checks out. And also, they were seemingly in the mix for Goran Dragic, in which case, isn't he kind of bringing what you're bringing in Dinwiddie for? I mean, maybe they're less confident about acquiring Dragic now, or don't know what he's left in the tank. But that move to me was weird for them.
All right. I think we have exhausted our list of losers, including abstract concepts that Rohan Nadkarni decided to put on the list that five people will understand.
We should do this again after the Lakers sign five all-stars in the buyout market. Like, we'll do that, because it'll be chess and checkers out there.
Emergency Megapod. All right, this has been fun. Folks, if you didn't already, go listen to part one, focusing on the winners of the trade deadline on the Open Floor Pod. And subscribe to that pod. Subscribe to this one if you haven't already. Thank you, Chris Mannix, Rohan Nadkarni, Michael the Pod Pina, for joining me. Thank you all for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.